Welcome to the deep dive. You know, we are doing something a little bit different today, jumping right into a highly specific but absolutely massive update from the Trump dossier 2015 to 2029 series. Specifically, we're looking at Chapter 301.
Yeah, and this is a big one. I mean, we are focusing on the last week of June 2026 when the U.S. Supreme Court basically dropped a ruling that, well, it fundamentally alters the entire balance of power in the American government.
Right, exactly. The case is called Trump v. Slaughter. And before we get into the weeds, I just want to set some expectations for you listening because this touches on some really intense political shifts. We are staying strictly neutral today.
Absolutely. Our goal is just to act as your guides through the source material. We want to help you understand, the mechanics of the arguments from all sides without taking any.
Yeah, so our mission today is to figure out how this one single court ruling vastly expanded presidential power, what this thing called the unitary executive theory actually is, and why this puts the US on a completely different path from how Europe runs its democracies.
It really is a fascinating divergence. But to understand just how big of an earthquake this June 2026 ruling is, we kind of have to look at the ground we were standing on before it happened.
Right, the old status quo.
Exactly. So since the 1930s, right around the New Deal era, the U.S. government has relied super heavily on these things called independent federal agencies.
Which is basically the alphabet soup we always hear about on the news, right? Like the FTC, the SEC, the NLRB, the FCC.
Yeah, the Consumer Product Safety Commission, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, all of them.
So think of these agencies kind of like the referees in a sports game. You want them, calling the fouls based on the actual rule book, not based on which team captain happened to hire them.
That is a great way to look at it. And historically, the way the government kept those referees impartial was by keeping these agencies at arm's length from the White House.
And they did that with the for-cause rule, right?
Yes, the for-cause protection. This was the whole shock absorber of the system. So the directors of these agencies had fixed terms, like 5 or 7 years.
Yeah.
They would often literally outlive a single presidency.
Meaning a president couldn't just get rid of them on a whim.
Right. Historically, a president could only fire an agency head for cause, which means they needed a legitimate, documented legal reason, like malfeasance, gross incompetence, criminal behavior. You couldn't fire them just because you had a policy disagreement.
Okay, so if I'm the president and I really don't like the SEC's stance on, say, regulating cryptocurrency, I can't just fire the SEC director because of that.
Exactly. Under the old rules, they were protected. The theory was that things like the stock market or national labor relations, they require long-term stability.
Oh.
You can't have the fundamental rules of the economy swinging wildly back and forth every 4 years just because of a tight election.
Right, that makes total sense. But that brings us to the catalyst of our deep dive today. What happens when someone actually challenges that established rule book? Okay, let's unpack this. What exactly did Trump v. Slaughter change?
Well, it took a sledgehammer to that entire 1930s architecture. In this ruling, the Supreme Court essentially said those for-cause protections are unconstitutional. They gave the president significantly more leeway to just fire these agency heads midterm.
Wow. So they just stripped away that historical arm's length protection entirely.
Yeah, the manual override switch was flipped. The president can now fire these directors at will, purely over policy disagreements, though the source material does point out one really crucial exception.
Oh, right. I remember seeing this, the Federal Reserve, right.
Yeah, the Fed, the central bank retains its special independent status. The court basically drew a hard line there, recognizing that controlling fiat currency and national interest rates is structurally different from, consumer protection rules.
I mean, I guess that makes sense. If global markets thought a sitting president could just fire the Fed chair to artificially lower interest rates right before an election.
Oh, it would be chaos. It would juice the economy for a short-term win, but trigger massive long-term inflation. The U.S. dollar would probably lose its global reserve status overnight.
Right, so the Fed is the one system they didn't touch. But for everything else, the floodgates are open. So what is the legal engine actually driving this? You mentioned the unitary executive theory earlier.
Yeah, the unitary executive theory. This is a concept that has been gaining immense traction in conservative legal circles for decades, and it relies on a very literal interpretation of Article 2 of the Constitution.
Which is the part that says the executive power shall be vested in a president of the United States.
Notice the phrasing there, vested in a president, singular. The theory argues that the Constitution does not say executive power is shared with a sprawling web of independent alphabet agencies.
So it all belongs to the one person at the top.
Exactly. If any federal employee is executing the law, They are wielding executive power, and therefore, they must be completely answerable to the elected president. The president has to be able to control the entire executive branch.
I mean, on a purely mechanical level, that makes sense. Like, if I'm the CEO of a company, but I can't fire my head of marketing because some board from 40 years ago gave them a lifetime contract, I'm not really the CEO.
That's a really good parallel.
But to a casual observer, handing one person that much unchecked power might sound, I don't know, kind of anti-democratic. Which is wild because the Supreme Court majority argued the exact opposite, right?
They did. The court's majority argued that this ruling actually strengthens American democracy.
Okay, how so? Because that seems counterintuitive.
Well, their rationale is that the American people elect a president. And if that president is on the hook for the country's policies, if they're getting blamed for the economy or regulations, they need the actual tools to control the institutions executing those policies.
But wait, doesn't that upset the whole checks and balances idea? Like, aren't we supposed to have friction in the system?
The court's majority sees a different kind of friction as the real threat. They talk about this concept of the fourth branch of government. Over the last century, Congress has increasingly outsourced the hard work of legislating to these independent agencies.
Right. They pass some vague law and let the EPA or the FCC figure out the actual details.
Exactly. And the court feared that these unelected administrators were basically operating in the dark without enough democratic oversight. They were writing rules, enforcing them, and penalizing people completely shielded from the voters.
So if I vote for a president because they promise to, like, slash red tape, and then they get into office and the career bureaucrats just say, no, my vote didn't really matter.
Right. The unelected administrators are functionally vetoing a national election. So by linking them directly to the elected president, the court argues it restores democratic accountability. If the policies fail, the president can't hide behind independent agencies anymore. The voters can hold them accountable.
Okay, I see the logic there. But every action has an equal and opposite reaction. Here's where it gets really interesting, because the critics outlined in the dossier raised some massive, blaring red flags about this.
Oh, absolutely. The critics have a completely different view of what protects democracy. They argue that elections aren't the only thing that matters. Independent, impartial institutions are just as vital, if not more so, for the rule of law.
Because if you give the president total control of the steering wheel, they can just run over whoever they want.
Exactly. The dossier outlines some very specific dangers here. Things like intense political pressure, massive self-censorship among career civil servants, a total loss of independent oversight, and zero continuity of policy.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about the real-world implications of that. Like, what does this actually look like for everyday life?
Well, think about agencies that monitor massive corporations or guard election rules. They sometimes have to make politically unpopular decisions to do their jobs, but now they are highly vulnerable to shifting political winds.
So let's play this out. Let's say a major Wall Street firm is caught blatantly manipulating stock prices, and the CEO of that firm just happened to host a massive fundraiser for the sitting president. Under the old rules, the SEC just goes after them, right?
Right, without a second thought, because their job is secure.
But under the new Trump v. Slaughter rules?
Under the new rules, the SEC director has to weigh doing their job against keeping their job. And the really insidious part is that the White House might not even need to call and make a threat.
Oh, just the knowledge that they could be fired is enough.
Exactly. It creates this atmosphere of self-censorship. The director might quietly defund the investigation or reassign the lawyers or just settle for a tiny fine. All just to avoid making the president mad.
That is wild. It basically turns an independent referee into just another player on the president's team.
And that degrades the system from objective law enforcement to political patronage. You get selective prosecution. If you're a corporation that criticizes the president, the whole regulatory apparatus could theoretically be weaponized against you.
Okay, so moving from the courtroom theory to the Oval Office reality, what does this actually mean for President Trump right now in the immediate aftermath of June 2026?
Practically speaking, it means he can execute his vision much, much faster. He doesn't have to wait for these directors' terms to expire. He can immediately clear the board, replace directors with loyalists, shift agency priorities and investigations. He can fundamentally centralize executive power overnight.
And this seems like a really important point to make. This isn't just a Trump rule. This is a permanent constitutional shift. This applies to all future Democratic presidents, too.
Yes, absolutely. It cuts both ways.
Right. So on day one of a new administration, a progressive president could just fire all of Trump's loyalists and install their own, which means the national regulatory environment could just completely reverse itself every 4 or 8 years.
And that leads to what economists call severe policy whiplash. It's incredibly destructive. Businesses rely on predictability. If environmental rules or labor rights are going to swing wildly from one extreme to the other based on razor-thin swing state margins, businesses just can't plan.
Right. If a company doesn't know if their new manufacturing process is going to be federally mandated or federally outlawed in 3 years, they just won't build the factory.
Exactly. The regulatory risk becomes too volatile. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, it is fascinating to see how the United States is handling this compared to the rest of the democratic world.
Yeah, the international context here is wild because Europe is doing the exact opposite, right?
They are. The U.S. is moving toward this highly centralized, strong president model. But European democracies, especially within the EU, they are structurally terrified of that kind of singular executive power.
So how do they handle their regulatory agencies?
They specifically use independent regulators for all the big stuff. Central banks, competition authorities, privacy watchdogs like the ones enforcing the GDPR, election commissions, they deliberately design them to limit political influence.
Like they want the politicians' hands as far away from the levers as possible.
Exactly. They use staggered appointments, independent funding streams, because in Europe, the belief is that true democracy actually requires less direct political control over the execution of the law.
I see. So if data privacy is a fundamental right, you don't want the prime minister secretly changing the enforcement rules just because their party is trailing in the polls.
Right. Europe believes power has to be distributed so it can't be weaponized. The U.S., with this Supreme Court ruling, is basically saying the executive branch should be a unified spear directed solely by the president. This is a totally different path.
So what does this all mean? Knowing all of this, how worried, or I guess, how hopeful should you be about the future of the American system?
Well, synthesizing the final chapter of the source material, it's important to note that this ruling doesn't automatically equal democratic decline. A highly centralized executive can actually be incredibly efficient and responsive in a crisis.
So it's not inherently doomed. It just depends on the variables.
Exactly. The true impact depends on a few vital variables. How do future presidents actually wield this power? Does Congress wake up and maintain aggressive oversight? Are independent judges in the lower courts willing to push back? And how transparent are future agency appointments going to be?
Right. Because if Congress remains super polarized and just lets the White House do whatever it wants behind closed doors, the risk of corruption goes way up.
Yes. And we have to remember, this isn't happening in a vacuum. It's part of a larger pattern. When you combine this with past rulings on presidential immunity and other restrictions on federal agencies, the executive branch is absorbing a massive amount of direct control over the government.
It really changes the stakes of every presidential election going forward. You aren't just voting for a policy platform anymore. You are handing one person the manual override switches for the entire regulatory machinery of the country.
It's a profound structural shift.
It really is. Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive. And as we wrap up, we want to leave you with a final thought to mull over, something to kind of explore on your own. We've been talking about this immense centralization of power in the hands of one human being. But what happens when artificial intelligence is inevitably integrated into executive decision making?
Oh, wow. That's a heavy thought.
Right. If one person holds all the levers of government and there's no independent bureaucratic friction left to slow them down, how fast could an algorithmic bias or a massive AI-driven policy shift reshape the entire country before voters ever get a chance to go back to the ballot box? If the ultimate goal of a democracy is to represent the will of the people, does true power belong in the hands of the single leader we elect or in the unglamorous independent systems designed to keep that leader's power in check? Something to think about.